Thank you for meeting us at the intersection, where the worlds of energy and technology come together.
Thank you for meeting us at the intersection. For those of you listening for the first time, welcome. And for those returning listeners, welcome back. I'm UTC President and CEO Cheryl Riggs, and today I'm joined by the Honorable Philip Moeller. He is the Executive Vice President, Business Operations Group and Regulatory Affairs at the Edison Electric Institute, which is also known as EEI. Mr. Moeller has the responsibility over a broad range of issues that affect the future structure of the electric power industry and new rules in evolving competitive markets. He has responsibility over the strategic areas of energy supply and finance as well, the environment, energy delivery, energy services, federal and state regulatory issues, and international affairs. Quite impressive. Prior to joining EEI in February 2016, Mr. Moeller served as a commissioner on the Federal Energy Regulatory Commissioner, FERC, ending his tenure as the second longest serving member of the commission. Equally impressive. Wow, we are just very honored to have Mr. Moeller here today. In the office at FERC from 2006 through 2015, Mr. Moeller ended his service as the only Senate confirmed member of the federal government appointed by both President George W. Bush and President Barack Obama. At FERC, Mr. Moeller championed many issues, but some of those policies included promoting improved wholesale electricity markets, increasing investment in electric transmission and natural gas pipeline networks, and enhancing the coordination of the electric and natural gas industry. Is there anything else you'd like to share about yourself, either professionally or personally?
Well, thank you, Cheryl, for having me. Pleasure to be at the intersection today. I have a diverse background, I guess, professionally, having worked for a member company, working for the U.S. Senate, being a member of FERC, and now at EEI. I also have lived all over the country, really. I was born in Chicago, grew up on a ranch in the Pacific Northwest, and spent my summers as a machinist in a salmon cannery in Alaska. So I can talk fish, and I can talk livestock as well, but really my passion is energy policy.
Awesome. I really like the way you connected that, because I mean, the reality is, although we talk about our professional experience, but it's very much we've groomed even in our personal lives. So it's very, thank you for sharing that with us. Well, let's dive right into the discussion. I mean, you've been at EEI for over 6 years now. And I just have to mention, UTC has always viewed EEI as our brother-sister association. As trade associations, we take pride in our mission and values. And most importantly, we put our members first. So what are some of the developments or changes that you've seen over time that you have since you've been with the association that you'd like to highlight?
Well, this certainly started before I arrived at EEI, but more of a focus on the customer experience and giving customers more options. That group actually reports up through Brian Wolf now, but we work very closely together. And we still have challenges in the wholesale electric markets, where we have more renewable energy coming into the system, which is great. It does bring some challenges in terms of keeping the system going. And those resources typically come in without any fuel cost. So it adds some stress to the existing fleet that relies on fuel. So those challenges remain. They haven't really been resolved over the last few years. But I think we're seeing more of a focus now at the state level, and the variety of issues that they're facing have more of a commonality now than they used to. So having an approach that focuses on, again, giving customers the options and empowering them to use their energy more effectively is one set of areas that's really grown in the last few years. We've always had a great relationship with UTC. I remember speaking to some of the annual meetings even when I was at FERC, because we have enough, again, a commonality of interests, particularly as it pertains now to the rollout of middle mile broadband that more and more customers will be getting access to in the next few years.
Well said. Just curious, because you're right. I mean, the challenges were there before either one of us, before I came to UTC or before you came to EEI. And I think the pandemic also put a highlight on how we have to collaborate. I mean, even within our associations and, you know, outside of our associations. So just if you could speak a little bit to how you think the pandemic affected increased efforts of collaboration.
That's a good point, because we were all in it together. We were reflecting a couple of weeks ago that our last meeting up until this one was about 2 years ago, where we met in person. We did have one in the meantime where we had our board meet, but for the most part, we've lived in this virtual world of communicating. And initially, we think back, you know, we thought it'd be a couple of weeks. It turned into pandemic being kind of a second full-time job for your members and ours, dealing with the pandemic. We had so many things we weren't ready for. As you may recall, there was a shortage of personal protective equipment that had the industry concerned. We weren't sure how our people in the field would be treated, how their health would be. And it was a massive effort that really went on for about 4 months until we kind of stabilized things. And the fact is that we had to communicate better. The good thing was that everybody had to be virtual, so that made it a little bit more of an efficient process of communicating. But we learned two major things from the pandemic that I think we already realized, which is that people really need their electricity, especially if they're going to be home, and they really need access to high-speed internet to be as effective as they could be, whether they were working professionally or students. And so in that sense, I think our two organizations have more in common than ever to deliver to people what they probably thought they needed. But after the pandemic, it's very clear what they need in order to be fully functional in this economy.
Absolutely. And I mean, you're absolutely right. We all are echoing the same message. Everyone, we're in this together. And you're right. I like the way you said a second job, because it did become a second job of sorts, as trying to navigate through the waters of our existing challenges and then to add another layer with the challenge of the pandemic. So I have to agree. I'm going to have to take that comment of and use it. So I'm going to give you credit for that, because it did become a second job. But what led you to this industry? And is there something in particular that sparked your interest? And what keeps you getting out of bed every day?
Well, Cheryl, thanks for the question. I look back on life, as I'm sure you do and your listeners do, at certain critical points. And the one thing that probably made a lot of difference intellectually to me was joining high school debate. And our senior year, the topic was energy independence. And there were a few of us who were really into it. And we'd spend all our time at the libraries back then getting evidence. And that, because we were so into it, I was able, as a 16-year-old, 17-year-old, to really kind of get a pretty good footing on the whole energy industry. And that continued through college. And then I ended up working for the Washington State Legislature following the utilities issues that not only included electricity and gas, but also telecommunications. And eventually, I was the chief of staff of that committee. So 1 year, telecom would be big. 1 year, energy would be big. And 1 year, nuclear waste issues in Washington State would be big. So it has stuck with me. I did that. I moved to D.C. to work for a U.S. senator specifically on the electricity issue, because I was a little more experienced than the average new person to the Hill. And I knew the politics, and energy politics are always very, very dicey. A lot of regional based issues related to that. And coming from the Pacific Northwest, a lot of specifics that are unique to the region, particularly the presence of so much hydropower and the presence of the Bonneville Power Administration is a major player. So it's just been in my blood the whole time, and it's changing, and I love it. There's still plenty of challenges, but there's also been an improvement in energy policy over the last three decades or so that have delivered to customers some value in the system.
I really enjoy that answer. And I hope for some of our listeners, if this is their first time, because I mean, we're always trying to reach people who may not have any idea about the energy sector, and to hear how you got sparked by a debate which is so interesting because all of us have so many different stories on how the energy sector captivated all of us, and how still to this day, you're just as excited because you understand and realize the importance and how critical it is to you, me, beyond, you know, and for generations to come. So I really hope that new listeners or even existing listeners really grab a hold of that nugget and run with it, because this sector is very dynamic for so many reasons. And you just really, in a nutshell, provided an insight of the reality. And I think that's also something, if we go back and listen to even to some of the other guests, they're saying the same thing. I mean, it doesn't change, which I don't hear often about many industries. So really, I really do appreciate that.
Well, Cheryl, I think you're right. And this is where we have a lot in common with the UTC members, that we're guided by the laws on paper, but we're ruled by the laws of physics. And that's something that not a lot of people will appreciate. And earlier I mentioned I grew up on a ranch, so I was pretty involved in agriculture growing up. And there's some similarities, I think, between agriculture and the electricity sector, which is that we have such an efficient agricultural system now, where very few people really are exposed to it and grow up raising either livestock or crops, that people kind of take it for granted. And similarly with electricity, we have the best electricity system in the world, the most reliable, and it's affordable as well as being safe. And so people don't really have to understand the complexities and the trade-offs that are involved in producing electricity and delivering it to customers. So that's going to be an ongoing challenge, I think, for perpetuity, that yes, we have to explain to people that this is not easy. It's a 24/7, 60 hertz a second system that needs to be maintained. And there are trade-offs that are involved. And if you want to assure affordability, reliability, and to get as clean as you can, as fast as you can, it's doable, but we have to also maintain reliability and safety and affordability in the decisions that are made to get there.
And although you put it in three very succinct words, affordability, reliability, but it's not easy at all, like you said, with our members. I mean, UTC, we, you know, serve all types of utilities, IOUs, public power co-op, and it's really challenging because there's no cookie cutter, because like you said, the regulations, the different challenges. So it is going to be ongoing. And I think that is also what adds to the public service excitement, for lack of a better way to say, that you're going to be busy and busy doing good things for many future generations. So there's definitely no shortage of that. So that is very, very well said. As I mentioned in the introduction, you know, like you talk about your experience, and I'm really enjoying how you are able to tie it back to how you grew up and where you grew up and personal experiences, because that is how we, you know, evolve into who we are today. But you served from July 2006 to October 2015. What are some of the highlights or greatest accomplishments during that time for you?
Well, at that time, particularly in the beginning of my tenure at the commission, the wholesale markets were really going through a major evolutionary stage. I mean, they're always evolving, but the development of some capacity markets, which are markets intended to make sure that there's enough generation there when it's available. That's different than the real-time energy market that people are getting paid for putting power into the grid. And so that was a big set of issues. I think the most profound change during that time was that the most controversial projects that we were voting on at the beginning of my tenure were projects that actually import liquefied natural gas into the United States for fear that we wouldn't have enough. In the meantime, the fracking revolution, along with horizontal drilling, completely revolutionized the natural gas extraction process and industry. And so by the time I was leaving, the most controversial projects that I was voting on were projects to actually export LNG as opposed to importing. And when you consider that was in the world of the most capital intensive industry in the United States, electricity and natural gas, especially if you combine them, that's a very short amount of time to do a 180-degree turn on the types of approaches. And so that had a profound impact with all this natural gas coming onto the market, lowering prices, and usually natural gas is the fuel that sets the marginal cost of electricity in the competitive wholesale markets. So we had a good period of falling prices for the major fuel in the United States. We had a number of pipelines being built to extract that. And yet, at the same time, as the electricity industry and the natural gas industry became more intertwined, they're two very different industries, and there needed to be more coordination. So I led an effort to expand that coordination process that also is still evolving, but as the two industries become more and more dependent on each other, there's a vulnerability there that we need to continue to address so that we can assure reliability.
And I can see how definitely that ties in, or you were able to use that as a valuable connection to what you're doing now. And as we go through the pandemic, I'm sure you're pulling on those experiences even now to deal with the challenges in a very short window of time. So I really appreciate you putting that in perspective, because even though you served that longer time, but it still wasn't probably enough time.
Well, there's certainly more things I could have gotten done if I'd had more time, but my time was sufficient. And FERC is a very unique agency in that it is largely attorneys and economists and some engineers that work on a variety of areas of jurisdiction, but it gives one a perch into the entire country and to some extent international energy policy as well, where, you know, dealing with the oil pipeline shipments and then siting natural gas facilities and hydro facilities, the licenses there, but a big part of the work was the electric wholesale market regulation and regulating transmission. And I think the current FERC is definitely challenged by the pandemic. And Cheryl, you keep mentioning it for good reason, because it's still affecting our lives. And the fact that they are voluntary in terms of going back to the office is one where I'm sure many of the commissioners and the commissioner staff look forward to the day when they're all back in the same building to continue their fine work.
Yeah, that's true. I think we all kind of look forward to that day, because although we managed to work through virtual settings, we do know the value of in person, whether that's for a meeting or just actual work. So I think we all look forward to that. But one of the things that also has been brought to everyone's attention is workforce development, or workforce crisis, as I call it. And of course, going hand in hand is DEI. And in the industry, we can look at DEI just a little bit differently. I look at equitable, like affordability, access, diversity. I look at whether you're in a rural area, suburban, urban, it doesn't matter. These challenges are still similar. The solutions may be a little bit different. And of course, the inclusive, we want to make sure that everyone has affordable, reliable, services from provided by our members. So from your perspective, what are some of the next steps that we as an industry, association, or even individuals can take to make sure this effort brings about progress and change?
Well, Cheryl, thanks for asking that. I'll go back a little bit first, which is that we've had a tough couple of years, but dealing with this set of issues that's overdue. But even before that, about 3-4 years ago, we have a chairman every year that rotates, so a CEO, and the chairman at the time, Chris Crane of Exelon, said, we really need to make sure our workforce is more representative of our customer base. And so he really kicked that effort off. And then our chairman, Ben Folk, they're based in Minneapolis, made it a priority that the entire industry take on this set of issues in a proactive way. And we've done that with the Executive Advisory Committee of Diversity Officers. We've got a major effort at EEI ongoing with the committee, and we have webinars and training sessions. And I think it's been a good wake-up call for people to make sure that they are conscious of trying to assist and mentor folks who can have more opportunities if they're given the attention. And in that sense, we're making progress. We have a long way to go, but I feel that we've embraced this set of issues and we're not going to let them go. We're going to continue to work on them. And again, as it relates to our workforce, there are many efforts of our member companies to make sure that access to these great jobs, often union jobs, are available to a wider set of interested parties because of the importance of them. And again, going back to, we should have a workforce that's representative of our customer bases.
Like you mentioned how you came into this sector through a debate. Part of it for me is like the earlier we can get individuals excited about the energy sector to learn and like you said, research. Yes, I think that's going to be key too. And that's how we're going to get more the workforce to look like our communities. Because I know for myself personally, I came into the energy sector later in life, you know, and I was like, wow, this has been here all along. It's almost like just an aha moment. So I hope, you know, I'm glad to hear all of the efforts that EEI is leading. I know we're very happy to be working with CEWD, which is definitely under EEI. So as a leader in the industry, I'm just so excited that, you know, you all are leading and paving the way for your other brother sister trade association and our members and being intentional about it. So very exciting, good stuff. So
you're right. You have to. It has to be. I love the word intentional that you use, Cheryl, because that's maybe sometimes what was lacking in the past. And so making it intentional is a great maybe not first step, but a step along the way. And for the listeners who aren't aware, CEWD, and thank you for mentioning it, is the Center for Energy Workforce Development that works to provide access and information to people about the jobs in this sector. And there's a focus on bringing veterans into our workforces because of the training that they have. So it's a great organization. It's housed here at EEI, but it's a very broad organization. In its goal and in its membership.
Yes, that it is fantastic. So I would urge people, like I said, if you are new or if you're not new, because sometimes when you are familiar with an organization or you may have, this is an opportunity to look at it with fresh lenses. So go get plugged in, go to EEI's website, see what they're doing, go to CEWD, see what they're doing, go to UTC, see what we're doing, and be a part of it in some way, somehow. Like I said, there's something that everyone can do, whether you're with an association, a member company, or just as an individual consumer. Everyone can get involved and make a good contribution.
Yeah, well, and I think one of the things that's great is that energy is kind of cool again with all the renewable development. We have young people interested in new technologies, not only in terms of, say, wind and solar and hydro, but the technologies that can be applied maybe even at the residential level to manage your electricity more efficiently, particularly when it's peak time and peak prices. And that has great opportunity. We also have to be somewhat concerned that we maintain the reliability on the distribution side, since we don't have the same kind of visibility into the distribution system that we have at the wholesale or what we call the bulk power system level. So it isn't without some risks, but the opportunities are great. And we're seeing more younger people interested in this industry, as they should be, because as you noted, it's big, it's complex, it's obviously important to everyone's well-being and health and safety. And I urge anyone interested that this is a great industry to become a part of.
Absolutely. Well, it has just been great catching up with you and getting educated myself. And I'm sure our listeners also have received so much value from this conversation. And I just want to thank you. But before we go, is there anything else that you would like to add before we close out the episode?
We have a number of policies that we're working on, whether it's in Congress or in regulatory bodies, FERC or the state commissions. And I think the more we can work together, the better off we'll be. When our companies come in for what we call rate reviews, and there'll probably be more of them now because the price of natural gas has gone up, that to the extent that we can work more closely with UTC members in presenting these cases, the better off we'll all be, because particularly at the state regulatory level, the average tenure of a state regulator is about 3.5 years. And that isn't very long when you consider the complexity of the regulation involved in this industry. So educating regulators on the trade-offs of their decisions is very important. And I think we can always work closely together, again, to benefit customers as we deploy capital and run the systems that people rely on for health, safety, and economic well-being.
Yes, and I can amplify that. I think that's probably one of the first lessons that I got as far as state commissioners and that short tenure, and how we can work together, the trade associations, to help educate and so they can make the right decisions. So that is very important. And you just amplified again how we started with talking about collaboration. So, you know, once again, thank you for taking the time to share with us both your professional and personal stories that all are connected. And I just want to thank you for meeting us at the intersection. And I hope others were able to meet us here and can also join us and continue the journey. So thank you, Phil. Thank you so very much.
Well, Cheryl, thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And I hope the listeners enjoyed our time together.
Oh, thank you. I'm sure they will. Thank you. Have a great rest of your day. Thank you.
You too.
Thank you for meeting us at the intersection. For more information about the Utilities Technology Council, visit utc.org.